You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
All right, everybody. Welcome to an episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, where we are past episode 1000 now. We're on our approach to episode 2000. We're at the bottom of the hill, but we're going to keep moving forward. And today's guest from Southeast Missouri, Dalton Harmon. Dalton, what's up, dude?
How's it going, man? How are you?
It's going good. Good. So let's be honest here. What year were you born?
1991.
Okay, 91. Just yep. Out of curiosity, did your mom or your dad love the movie Roadhouse?
I am named after Patrick Swayze. My brother's
name. Are you 100% serious? Are you 100% serious?
Swear to God.
Because there's also Dalton in that movie too.
Well, Dalton, Patrick Swayze is Dalton in Roadhouse. And then
that's what I'm saying.
His best friend is Garrett. My brother's name is Garrett.
You have got to be kidding me.
I swear to God.
Are you telling me that you're like, you're not pulling my leg? Your parents named you after Roadhouse.
I swear to God. My brother's name is Garrett. Sam Elliott's name is Garrett in Roadhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. Dude! Yeah. You have made it. Yes, I want to hear it.
So my mom, in love with Patrick Swayze, absolutely in love with Patrick Swayze her whole life, okay? She said, the day Patrick Swayze dies, I'll be on my deathbed, okay? The weirdest part about it is my mom got super sick, was in ICU when she woke, like when she kind of got her bearings about her. She got to find out that Patrick Swayze had passed away.
This is crazy.
Yeah, I'm absolutely named after Patrick Swayze, yes, after Dalton.
Dude, yes! Like, that's all I want to say.
Dude, what like, this whole life?
I have been, dude. I have been. The only thing that would top this is if someone was named Johnny Utah in real life, and then someone was named like Boda, and their brother was named Boda Cephas from Point Break.
Yes.
Bodie from Point Break. Yes. Dude, so I got a question.
Yeah.
Was this known to your family? Was this known to your friends growing up? Did you and your brother just try to roundhouse everything growing up?
Well, it was kind of embarrassing when we were little, but I've gotten the question roughly 1,000 times in my entire life, and it's always a yes. Like it was obvious. There was no question about it. When Roadhouse is on at your house, you know, once twice a year, and you're all of a sudden the guy's name's Dalton and his best friend's name's Garrett, kind of look over at the other brother and you're like, oh crap. That was definitely us.
Dude, there is nothing wrong with that.
That's fine.
Dude, I'll tell you right now, my name is Daniel. Okay. My mom named me after Daniel in the Lion's Den.
Okay. Yeah.
My brother is Mark from the book of Mark in the Bible. Right. So we're Bible related, right? And I don't want to talk down on the Bible. Bible's kind of badass in some certain aspects. But you know what's more badass than the Bible? The movie Roadhouse and Patrick Swayze. What's the other guy's real name in life? Garrett, his brother or his best friend?
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
Dude.
So, here's the thing.
This episode just got really good.
Out in the Bible?
Not that I know.
Did a guy's throat out of him?
Right. No, they haven't done that. Or maybe they did it, but in a different way.
Not as cool as Patrick Swayze did on the river with his shirt off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. When that guy reached for his pistol out of his boot, and then, I got your throat.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Dude, my day. Like, I honestly was thinking about this, like, oh, dude, just, you know, like, hey, it's just going to be another BS session. I want to talk about deer hunting and what it's like deer hunting. But now I just want to talk about Patrick Swayze, dude. That's badass. Okay. What were people's reactions when you were younger, when they found out you were named after the two main characters in Roadhouse?
Well, They all kind of knew when I was younger. We grew up in a super small town, so everybody knows each other. So it was just kind of common knowledge among the family. But as you got older, it was never other kids that would ask because they didn't really know. But when adults would ask, it was always like, "Ha, huh, nice." You know, it was kind of the same. It was kind of you'd see a little bit of jealousy, like, "Damn, I didn't think of that." You know.
Yeah.
Every woman's like, "Oh, I should have done the same thing." You know.
Dude.
One of my favorite quotes, nobody puts the baby in the corner. I say it to people all the time.
Old Patrick Swayze, that son of a gun. One of my favorites growing up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dude. So, like, how serious of a fan was your mom? Did she have, like, posters of Patrick Swayze in the house?
Not in our house. But, I mean, it was Dirty Dancing, and Dirty Dancing was her favorite movie of all time. Roadhouse, like, mm-hmm. those movies played all the time. If that movie was on TV, it was like your grandpa with the Western. If that movie was on TV, plans are canceled. We're watching. Yep. Like, no question about it. I wasn't watching, but I'm not going to watch, you know, Dirty Dancing when I'm a kid. But it doesn't matter what we have. We got to cancel Christmas. It's on TV.
Yep. Yep. So I got to tell you something. I am that guy where there's three movies. That one, maybe there's more than three, but these are the three that I'm thinking about right now. Number one, Above and Beyond. If I'm scrolling through the channels and I see that Point Break with Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves is on TV, I'm stopping what I'm doing and I'm watching it, or I'm trying to multitask and watch it while I'm doing work or something. Second one is the movie Predator, the original Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers. You know, that movie, that is a classic, and that just a badass movie with so many quotable lines. And the other one is Roadhouse, dude.
Yeah.
And so, man,
I have three movies the same way, but they are way different genres. All three of them.
Okay. Let's hear it.
One is a little bit, you're almost embarrassed to say it, but it's such a badass movie when you watch it over and over. But 8 Seconds. Have you ever seen 8 Seconds of Wayne Bros?
I've seen 8 Seconds, dude.
Yep. My favorite movie and the most quotable movie of all time for me is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? There is no better movie than that. It's the greatest movie ever made. And then the original Fast and the Furious.
Okay.
Fast
and Furious number one.
Number one. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How many do they have out now? So now that you've committed to number one, have you seen all 35 other Fast and Furious?
Fun little fact, my wife, she bought me every Fast and Furious movie for like birthday presents when we were dating and stuff. Like that was like a $12 movie DVD. We never watched any of them on DVD, I don't think. But I'll watch 1 through 5 pretty much any time they're on, if I'm not busy, I will make plans to watch one. Like, and I'm the type that I don't like to really watch new movies. So if I have an evening with like no kids, no wife, it's just me and I'm going to watch a movie, like I'll put Oh Brother, Where Art Thou on or Fast and Furious or 8 Seconds. I know it's good. So I might as well just watch it again. Why waste 2 hours on something new that may suck? Yeah.
Exactly. Let me tell you a little bit about my life growing up.
Fast and Furious are a lot alike. Isn't that what everybody says?
I mean, kind of. It's like Undercover Cop.
Yeah, I think everybody says like, they're like the same movie. Just one's surfers and one's racers.
Yeah, and so what's the guy who's dead now? What's his name?
Paul Walker.
Yeah, Paul Walker.
Yeah.
His job has been tasked to go into this kart street racing. And
infiltrate it.
But he ends up really liking the guys that he's doing, you know, he's trying to arrest or trying to get dirt on. But that's the same thing with Johnny Utah and Keanu Reeves' character in Point Break. There are some similarities there. There's some. Yep.
Yeah, they say it's the same. I've heard a lot. It's like the same movie, just one group surfing, the other group is racing
cars,
street cars. Yeah.
Yep. Perfect. I like that. Okay. When I was a kid, my hero used to be Jean-Claude Van Damme. Dude, me and my brother, I was born in 80. He was born in 85. And there were a lot of like really badass parts of my childhood that I can, like, I look back on and I was doing like Jean-Claude Van Damme stuff. We, from the local movie theater, when the movie left, Bloodsport left, it was either Bloodsport or Kickboxer. I can't remember, but we had I think it was Bloodsport. We had a full size cutout of Jean-Claude Van Damme and we would pretend to fight it in our living room. It was
still
in our living
room. Probably.
Of course I lost, right? I'd fall down, you know. And so me and my brother, we would do this thing. We would pretend dip our hands in glue and then pretend dip our hands in the broken glass, like in that scene. And then, no, that was Kickboxer in that scene. And then we would go and pretend we'd fight each other. Oh, dude, that was. And then I was such a huge fan that on the first birthday that me and my wife were dating, she made me a Jean-Claude Van Damme cake.
Oh, gosh.
Birthday cake. And I think that was the moment I fell in love with her.
Right now, like, that was awesome. And then you look back, like, kind of silly, but still awesome.
Still awesome. Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. Hell yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Dude, being young is awesome. And then we got to grow up at some point and do all this stuff. Like, I don't know, man. I wish I could just pretend fight roundhouse, practice on roundhouses all day and like live that stepbrother's lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fun to get in the floor with the kids though. You know, it's then when you start to get tired, the nice thing about it is you don't have to worry about your older brother or your younger brother beating the crap out of you. So he's like, hey, we're done. Cause you know, you're the strongest person in your house.
Exactly. So it's kinda nice. Exactly. You got to set the boundaries, basically.
Yeah. It's like, all right, we're done. That's it.
Yep. Fact.
Back to Point Break.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, I cannot wait to teach my kids about these movies, right? Because I've sat and I've watched some of the newer movies that have come out. Like, I'm a geek about the Marvel movies.
I love the Marvel movies.
Yeah, the superhero movies. But some of the other stuff that's coming out, like, some of the comedies, they're just not funny anymore.
No.
They try too hard and it just is not cool. But outside of that, I can't wait to, you know, teach my kids about, you know, when they're old enough to watch a proper sex scene in a movie, I can't wait to sit down with my sons and watch like Patrick Swayze and like Jean-Claude Van Damme kick the shit out of someone and then how to properly treat a woman
right
with respect, right? Honor and dignity. That's how you do it. That's how you get chicks right
that's
there.
That's how you do it. See how he holds that door open? Look at that.
Yep.
That's how a man holds a door open.
Exactly. And then he roundhouse some guy who disrespects his woman.
Through the same door.
Right.
He just threw the guy through the door, and so his new girlfriend could go through. He picked the door up and moved it out of the way for him. Look at
exactly.
That.
Exactly. That's it's called respect and honor.
That's respect. Love it. Yes.
Boy, I did not expect this podcast to turn out with this intro, dude. This is badass.
Oh, it's going to be a blast.
You might have actually rewritten my whole day. I have, we have a no school day. So that means that all my kids are downstairs or outside doing something. Nobody knows where they're at. We live in a community where we have a lot of parents who work from home.
Right.
And the kids just kind of go. And then they come and go throughout the house the entire day. And my wife's downstairs working. I'm up in my office recording this podcast. And at times, it's just like, are our kids safe? We'll do a neighborhood, like, text.
Check thread. In, yeah.
Yeah. Are my kids over there? Yeah, they're over here. A head count. All right, we got them. Then we can forget about them again. Right. Or they come in when they're hungry type of deal. Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I just recently remodeled my basement, and there's a big TV down there. And that's one of the things we've been doing is like, when we're back, we watched Sandlot. We've watched all the old school movies that like just started from the beginning, like anywhere we could. My oldest daughter, she's worn a t-shirt that says L7 Weenie on it. Like she's eat up with the Sandlot. She watched it like 18 times in a row.
Nice.
Like that's, you know, you're raising your kids right when they like those types of movies. They're into the quote unquote normal stuff, you know, when we were kids.
Yep. Now I'm going to tell you something here. Didn't they try to remake the Sandlot at one point, and didn't that movie suck? Like Sandlot 2?
I've read on that before and saw videos that they said that like producers and directors have ran out of ideas. So they're trying to remake every movie at this point.
Yep. Yep. The Sandlot 2. I can't remember. Yeah, I think they tried to remake it, and then I watched maybe 30 minutes of it. Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And so I'm even trying to think about a movie that has been remade that is actually good enough to be called, I don't know why people do that. It's just probably for money, I'm guessing.
Yeah, the only thing that I do like is like, the Disney movies when they go live action. I think they did the Lion King. Have you seen the live action Lion King? I like it because it's literally word for word, scene for scene,
the same
what the original animated version was. They did not change anything. It's exactly the same. I'm like, that I could do that. When you try to change nostalgia, it's not nostalgic anymore. You know.
Did you happen to see the latest Happy Gilmore movie?
I haven't watched it yet. Been waiting for an evening when I have nothing else to do. Is it good?
No. I mean,
I heard it's full of celebrities. Like, it's got everybody in it.
Yeah,
like
there's a ton of people in it. There's a lot of golfers in it. There's like a lot of the, there's always these connections to main scenes in the previous movie. And I watched it for nostalgia because I
have to go. Bobby Boy.
Yep, exactly. And so they have another fight like that in the, you know, in the movie. And it's just like, I feel like they tried too hard. And what made Happy Gilmore 1 so awesome was that Adam Sandler, when he was younger, just was like, crazy ideas popped into his head. Let's do this. And that's it.
Yeah. Everything's impromptu. He doesn't have to think about it.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, I got to do a quick like commercial break right now where I have to talk about my partners, right? I got to sell out a little bit. I got to talk about the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicle. So I check that box. And these are really badass partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. I really appreciate working with them. They're badass products. I really do. For example, we'll start with Vortex because I went to South Dakota this past week. And I ended up using the Ranger HD 3000 range-finding binoculars quite a bit, and they were badass, man. What I like about those binoculars is when you see a group of deer at a distance, and then you're ranging the deer and then you're ranging another object to see, and then you can kind of calculate how far they are from that object. And so like when I went in to make my stock on, you know, a couple deer this year, while I was out there, a couple does, I could range the object and then range the terrain feature that I needed to get behind. And that would tell me how far that deer was from that area. And so then I just did the math and I would creep up and I'd be like, okay, well, I'm this far. Now, once I got into the kill zone, that's when I reached for my range finder, and it's just a little lighter and easier to carry. So, that's how I used it. Now, when I get into the tree, in a couple weeks, I'm probably just going to be using the rangefinder. I'll have the range finding binoculars with me, and I'll be able to use those in the woods, and they serve their purpose. But I think in the tight quarters of where I hunt, the rangefinder is going to be the seal the deal for me. So go to vortexoptics.com, check out their full lineup of optics, rangefinders, rifle scopes, red dots, binoculars, spotting scopes, you name it, they have it. They got a full lineup of apparel. They got sunglasses. And then also go check out the Whitetail Edge facility website as well. So vortexoptics.com. Next on the list is Wasp Archery. I am anxious and patiently waiting to unleash a wasp broadhead on its victim. I guess we'll call it a victim. I feel like my arrow setup is like a Patrick Swayze roundhouse kick to the head. Like if you get kicked, roundhouse kicked by Patrick Swayze, you're going down. And the same way I feel about my arrow set up with a wasp broadhead, if you get hit with that broadhead, you're going down. So I don't know if I could go into the specs here about it, but I'm just going to leave it at that. Like getting hit with a wasp broadhead is like getting hit with a Patrick Swayze roundhouse. You're not walking away from it. So I'm surprised these companies even work with me anymore, to be honest with you. I've lost my mind. So wasparchery.com, check out their full lineup of mechanicals and fixed blade heads. Discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras. I mean, it's not too late to order or go to their website and pick up one of their cell cams, the new Ultra. It's badass. It's easy to set up. The functionality of that camera and the learning curve of it are very, very easy. Scan a QR code. The camera is set up. The functionality of this camera is second to none. And it's one of those things that have helped me gain knowledge about deer movement on the farms that I hunt, even though I'm living four hours away from it. So go to tacticam.com/cameras, check out the 3.0 versions and the brand new Ultra. And then we're going to go into Code Blue Scents. Now, this little commercial is going to include you, Dalton. Do you run any mock scrapes?
I'm a little bit, yeah. Yeah, I don't have great luck with them, but I do run.
Okay.
I get a lot of does that hit them, but. And I've used the Code Blue ropes before, and they hit them, but they're not super regular.
And this is great that you said this, and I'll tell you why. Because over the course of the last month, I put the two previous years, I set up my mock scrapes, and in the mock scrapes, they just exploded. And I mean, right. Does. Fawns, bucks of all ages and sizes were hitting that. And I got the pictures to prove it, right? This year, I did the mock scrapes, paired it with a Reveal trail camera, and nothing happened. And I'm like, what did I do different this time? And I didn't do anything different. And so I was just like, man, what's going on? At the same time, I was noticing that there just wasn't a ton of bucks on the farms at that point. And so that might have had something to do with it. Maybe it had to do with crop rotation. Maybe it had to do with the amount of water that we got this year.
That's my idea.
Yeah. And so, Yeah. And so a whole bunch of different things played out. Now, while I was in South Dakota on my mule deer hunt, I had this 100-inch, 90-inch buck came up, worked the rope, made the scrape, walked away. The next 24 hours, I had 15 different bucks in the next 24 hours, 15 different bucks hit that mock scrape in front of that camera. And I would have never known that. Yeah. And so that tells me right there that that works, right? The mock scrape is working. And if I didn't put that mock scrape out, I wasn't going to be able to have an inventory of what was there. The cool part about this is that I now know that one of the bucks from last year that I thought disappeared, he was a big nine pointer, he is back this year. And he's back, and I was like, oh shit, here he is. And I hadn't seen him all summer. He was a regular last year. And then sometime in October, mid to late October, he disappeared along with another buck, and I have not seen them since. A couple days ago, he shows up, bingo, along with two other shooter bucks on the farm. I have basically he's a 10 point with a double brow, making him 11 pointer. And then I have a long main beamed eight. He's just a huge bodied buck, doesn't score much. But and so I was getting nervous to the point where I reached out to Code Blue and I was like, hey, what are the chances of you sending me some faulty product here?
Right.
And they're like, well, not, you know, and he walked me through their quality process. And then I was just nervous because at this point, the last 2 years on this farm, I wasn't seeing anything. I was seeing a ton of deer this year, nothing. And then all of a sudden, boom, one hit on that mock scrape by a real deer sent that whole area ablazing. And now I have deer hitting that mock scrape every single day. And now I'm not as worried anymore. I feel good about it.
Did you get rain in that time period?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, I'm actually just for myself doing that. We are so dry this year. So yep. Dry. None of my scrapes are getting hit. I've only seen one scrape opened up on any of my properties.
Yep.
And so what I'm doing, I'm going to see next year if we're dry again, I'm going to start packing water in when I go and change batteries out and stuff. And I'm gonna wet those scrapes up, wet those ropes up, and see if that helps engage them a little bit better. That's my idea. I think it's some moisture. Hunting scrape line dry after rain has been one of my best tactics ever. So if maybe we can engage that and just dose it with water, we'll see.
Well, moisture holds scent. So yes. maybe you're onto something here. In
that's
really
a lot.
Dry
you
periods.
Think deer tracking dogs wouldn't want to go in the rain. They love the rain. Anytime right. You know about the dog tracker, they're like nothing but like a nice drizzle or a mist. They love it. But that scent just is volume.
Yeah, that's crazy. I like that. I like that thought process. So you feel that on dry years, deer don't lay as many scrapes?
You're gonna get your rain either way, but I think guys, you know, you have guys that they say, oh, ruts start early. Oh, seeing scrape lines open up early, seeing, you know, whatever it is. I think that if you paid better attention that those scrape lines opening up, I think they really will correlate when you get that first rain. If it's in the right part of October, that middle part of October, early to middle, those scrape lines will start to open up maybe a little earlier or later if you get a couple good rains.
Dude, my mind's spinning now. Because that is exactly what just happened on the farms that I have cameras in front of mock scrapes. The rain came and they just exploded. And then since then, it's gotten dry, you know, over the past 5 days, and it hasn't. It started to slow down a little bit. Right. But I think there's more rain in the forecast this week. So I would really like to pay attention on how that, because you've heard it how many times throughout the course of being a deer hunter, that as soon as there's a rain event, then all these deer, especially closer to the mid to late October timeframe, even in the rut, they want to get out there and freshen up their scrapes.
I don't even know they want to freshen them up. I think the scent is just more, there's more volume of scent there, so they're naturally attracted to it more. Not so they don't want to freshen up. I think they smell, they may, and I don't know if they can smell another buck in that scrape, but they can smell that scent and they think, nah, I'll go. It's
more predominant.
It's my turn. It's me. I'm going there. I'm going to make sure mine's the last one on top.
I think I like that. Dude.
It's also really nice if you get a good storm and the leaves cover those scrapes. Because it's like, I've seen them. It's like they get mad when those leaves are on top of those scrape lines and those scrapes are opened up and they're hot.
Yep.
They come in and they kick the crap out of it.
Obviously, we're talking field edges, okay? And what I mean by that is obviously there are scrapes on field edges, all the overhanging trees and all that stuff. Outside of that, where have you seen the most scrapes on the properties that you hunt? On, like, let's talk about specific terrain features, or like whether it's bedding or transition or staging. Is there a place where you have seen more scrapes than other places?
Yeah. So we don't, I don't see scrapes in field edges because we don't really have any field edges.
You're big woods.
So we do have fields, but all of our fields are all full of cattle. You don't really get a lot of deer in field. Everything we hunt is timber. And
this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo, shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
But the best way that we find scrape lines are all soft edges. So if you get in, we have a lot of logging that goes around here, and you get into a spot, like a spot that really comes to mind is there's a heavy pine thicket that used to be a pasture a long time ago. It was a pasture. You could look at old aerial maps and see it. Now it's all pine thicket. Right beside it is a nice, decently mature timber stand of oaks. And then right adjacent to it, so it's like a three-sided soft edge, is like clear cut, thick, nasty. Those scrape lines along that pine thicket in that timber are loaded every year. Benches that have good acorns on it, if you can find a good bench, it is going to be loaded with scrapes. And I have beliefs on that. The same way for that bench, especially a bench that lays slightly inward, so it back slopes to the to the ridge. They hold a little bit more moisture, so the oaks always hold more acorns there. Even in bags like this year, we don't hardly have any white oaks, but that's where I shot my buck this year, is on a ever so slightly back sloping. You'd never see it on a map. It had one scrape I found. It had white oaks. They travel that bench above the bedding, and it absolutely is. It's going to be loaded with scrapes here as soon as we get a rain.
Yeah, I'll tell you this right now. I can relate to the pine thicket because one of the best farms that I've ever hunted. I lost access to it, had an overgrown pasture. I'm going to guess it was, it had a barn on it. So I think it was just a 100 years ago, there used to be a house on it or a barn on it. And that's where they kept their cattle. And then fast forward 100 years, it got overgrown, multiflower rows, thick pines, nasty shit in there, old foundation. And right exactly what you were talking about on the edge of that, where it met open timber, the fence line there, that created some edge for them to travel up and down. And that the sign in there was ridiculous.
Yeah. Soft edges are my favorite.
Yeah.
Everybody overlooks them. Everybody.
What's your definition? What's your definition of a soft edge? Be as specific as possible.
Soft edge is if, and they can be even smaller, like even harder to find, but a soft edge is something like you have two different styles of timber that meet in the woods, or you have a, even if it's a section that they a guy's logged last year, it hasn't really overgrown, but there's just a definite edge that there's mature timber on one side, there's tops and old logs and some brush piled up in the other. They walk those edges like crazy. And I've seen it where, like when we're squirrel hunting, you see nice sections of hickories that are dropping, maybe some black oaks in there that the squirrels are cutting, but the deer won't cut those black oaks as much. Right beside a good white oak stand. You'd never see it on a map because you'd have to see it in person. They'll walk that edge. They'll mill out into the white oaks and eat, and then right back up towards those hickories and those black oaks to walk.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Talk to us a little bit. You mentioned it's cattle pasture and timber where you're at in Southeast Missouri.
Yeah.
Walk us through the properties that you have access to, and explain a little bit more in detail what the terrain is like on these farms.
Yeah. So I've got right at, I have 94 or about 100 acres where I'm at. And then the property that butts up to us, we caretake on his farm. I say farm, it's all timber. It's 150 acres. So I have about 250 acres that I hunt. The neighbor around it, he's got the cattle pastures, but they all have cattle in them all year round. So you can almost look at those as almost dead zones. I mean,
they're like feeder lots.
Well, they're not. They're big pastures, but the deer down here, they don't like to be. I mean, it may be a 60-acre section, and you almost use it as that pasture, the edges of that pasture is a pinch point.
Mm-hmm.
More than you would actually go ever hunt it, because the deer, they don't prefer to be in that pasture. There's not the cows have grazed everything down. There's no really quality browse in there, and we have so much logging that's going on. We have some thick. It is very thick, very steep. On my 94 acres, there's about 400 foot of elevation change in that 94 acres in multiple spots. So it's steep.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of terrain difference, elevation and decline.
There's a lot. It's some big steep ridges. That's something I've talked to guys before that live. I had a buddy that lived in Iowa, and it's pretty flat. And we were talking about the surface area of an acre and how much more surface area we have to cover on 100 acres than what a nice flat 100 acre area in Kansas 100%. Or Iowa would be. It was kind of hard to explain it to him. I'm like, you're hunting a flat pool table and I'm hunting a mountain. Not a mountain, but it's big ridges.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's crazy because on the line, one day on the line, we walked probably, and this was in South Dakota, we walked 7 miles one morning, but it wasn't 7 miles. You know what I mean? It was seven miles on the map, but then you add in the drops and going up and stuff like that. It was more than that. So I 100% get what you're saying. And from that aspect alone, is there a different strategy that you take in steeper terrain than you would in flatter ground?
Yeah, the biggest strategy is dealing with thermals in our area. Like, if you're going to be serious about it, you've got to respect those thermal hubs because those bottoms, they drag. Now, if you can find the right spots, you can use them to your advantage, especially in the evening time. You can hunt winds that are almost dead wrong. I mean, totally dead wrong. but you milkweed test them and they'll go out in front of you right into where you're planning on shooting a deer 5 feet, and then they'll just drag right behind you into one of those bottoms. So it's a lot of you aerial scout and you figure it out, and then you have to go try it. Like you're going to mess up a lot. I figured that out pretty early. The more we can mess up out there early on, the better we are later on.
Yeah. I'll say this. I have a farm where it's a river bottom farm, but leading away from the bottom, you come up on these bluffs and you come up on these big, it's a big valley that goes right into this big timber, kind of something on a smaller scale than what you're talking about. The cool thing about that is from a thermal standpoint, that bottom just sucks everything low until, okay. So you're sitting in the timber in November and you can see the sun coming up and it creates a line on the hillside of the shade versus the sun. And there's a thermal pull at that exact moment. And I can drop milkweed down and it literally lands on that airflow and it just hovers. And it's almost like ocean tides,
right?
Where it'll suck down and then it'll come up and then it'll just get lower as the sun comes up higher in the sky. It'll get lower and lower until the bottom just finally sucks it all the way out. And then in the evenings, it's the reverse. As the sun starts to go down, you'll feel that coolness start to come back up. And the second that the sun goes down, you can feel the thermals just go whoop. And drop straight down
just like that.
Yep. Now, have you ever gotten in trouble where the thermal, you know, like maybe you're in the shade, you're above the ground in your tree stand, the sun hits you, but then below you it's in shade and you've had like the thermals will pool and not have like a flow per se. And then the deer hit that pool and bust, even though you're up and your personal thermals are rising, your past scent is pooled down somewhere below you.
Yeah. I have a bottom. When you're talking about all this, I have a bottom, I call it spring. We have a spring down there and it's like the most beautiful place to hunt. Like to sit down there and you just love it. But specifically in the morning, it is the scariest place to sit because it's a big travel corridor and you've got middle of November, you've got until about 7:30 at 7:30, you're safe from anything. Doesn't matter what the wind's doing. Does not matter. Anytime before that, you are quite possibly screwed because I will drop milkweed. And what you're talking about, I'll see my milkweed rise behind me, wind blowing me in the face, everything feels amazing. But there's the way the sun comes up back behind me, there's still a shaded spot. It's hitting me right below my feet. It'll drag back. And when it hits that shaded spot, because it's so steep, you'll watch that milkweed suck back in underneath the stand and out in front of me.
Yep.
And I'm like, there's no way to hunt it. There's no way to hunt it of a morning until that sun hits. And as soon as that sun hits, you're golden. It doesn't matter what way the wind's blowing because it's so steep. The wind can blow right over that deer's back. It's 30 feet above their head.
Right. That's the thing, right? Like, I wish I could sit here and me and you could literally teach people about it, but it's such a observable technique that people need to see it in action.
Yeah.
Because thermals are probably, in my opinion, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, the most complicated thing to understand when it comes to, I guess if you want to call it like that next level strategy beyond hunting specific wind directions.
Yeah, we have weird winds with all the ridges and all the elevation changes. The wind's always really weird. Unless it has to be over 15 miles an hour sustained for us not to have, I don't know if you've ever been in a bottom and you feel the wind hit you in the face and it dies down. And then all of a sudden you get like a 10 mile an hour wind right into your back. It's like that whole bottom's taking a big breath and then pushing it out.
Dude.
And
yes.
I try to explain that. And you know, some guys don't care. It's whatever. It's fine. I used to think that the videos of guys lighting smoke bombs out of their tree stands, I'm like, what a, you know, what an idiot. And then as you get older, you're like, oh, that guy's a freaking genius. You know, like he figured it out. He figured out why he got busted. He went and lit a smoke bomb in the middle of November after he tagged a buck to see why that buck spooked 5 feet before he got in the shooting lane. He had to put a harder shot onto it. Why? Because it came down, and when it got right by that cedar thicket, there's just enough change in the way the wind's blowing that it sucks around that cedar thicket, sucks it right in the middle of it. And you're like, man, that's why.
Man, I got a place on a south wind where I have a stand, and the elevation isn't necessarily, the elevation isn't huge, okay? But I'm sitting on an edge of open pasture. And it's almost like a staging area before you get into a destination ag field. And I always wondered why the deer would just hold up right there. And so I'm like, well, I need to get a stand. I got a south wind. It's going to blow in there. And I don't know if I can hunt that stand anymore because it does exactly what you said. Once that sun goes down, then the deer appear. The sun gets behind the tree lower in the sky and there's shade on the forest floor. Then you'll start to see the deer move a little bit. And then you'll have the wind hitting you in the face all afternoon. And the second that that forest floor goes shade, you start to see the pendulum of thermals hit. And then the deep breath, I call it, where the wind will blow and it'll go and it sucks that back in maybe 40 yards. And then the deer get downwind of me. I'm just like, they're just like, boom. And I'm like, I can't hunt this anymore. I have to find something. Sick. I have to find something else to hunt.
Yeah. Unless it's always the best freaking spot.
Yep. And unless the wind is absolutely howling, I can't hunt that spot.
Yeah.
Because the thermals will win on an average wind day. But once the wind is howling, and I mean howling, then it will overtake the thermals.
See, I'm on that too. I'm theory on the whole, the wind howling. Okay. So I don't know if you've ever talked to guys that are like, man, we always hunt the big bottoms when the wind is, you know, 30, 40 mile an hour because those deer want to get out of the wind and they're down in the bottom. That's when we always see deer in the bottom. I don't think that's true. I think that you just didn't get busted because the thermals aren't dragging down as hard. The deer naturally travel through there. The wind is helping keep your thermals from dropping down into where they're going to cross or where they're staging up. That's why you're seeing the deer. It's not because they're out of the wind. They're used to the wind. They're used to the heat. They're used to all of it.
Yeah. So the crazy part, and I've said this from day one. And when I mean day one of me understanding deer movement on a complicated level more than what I used to, when I was, you know, in my early 30s, now I have this theory that deer can see, how we use our eyes to see you're wearing an orange shirt, you're wearing sunglasses, you're wearing a black hat, and you can see my blue shirt and yellow, you know, yellow on it. I feel that a deer nose can smell it tells them everything from time that something has been there. Like the dilution of the scent allows them to know how long it's been since something has been there. It allows them to smell wind and thermals on a complicated level that we will never understand. And allows them to basically just assess threats based off of potency.
Yeah, and I agree.
And something that we will, like, imagine if we could see what a thermals look like and see what the wind is doing. I think deer can understand that on a level that we can see, but we can't see it, and we definitely can't smell it.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, space mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, too athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace! To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Well, I heard a guy say this. I don't want to take credit for it. He was talking about a deer in their nose. I think he was a tracker. And he said, if you walked into your house and your wife was cooking, baking a cake, you'd walk in and be like, oh my God, that's got to be cupcakes or a cake. That smells amazing. Instead, yep. If a deer walks into your house, he would go, 3 cups of flour, 2 yep. eggs, 1/2 a cup of milk, yep. buttercream icing,
yep.
gluten-free. He said, that's the yep. difference. Like yep. they can tell how long that cake's been in the oven walked in your house.
Almost done. Yep. Almost yeah. done. Yeah. And that's the crazy shit. And I feel like once a hunter can understand that, and you don't have to understand it fully, but putting yourself in the right position and just, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I'd love to understand your thought on this. The only reason I figured this out is because I spent a ton of time in the tree stand getting busted for 10, 15 years.
Yeah. I think the best way to figure it out is to just go screw up. Like, go study maps, find the best spot on there and go hunt it. What's the worst thing that happened? You blow a deer out. It's not the end of the yep. world. You know, it right. sucks. Yeah. Disheartening. Absolutely. Go find another spot and do it again.
Right.
Take 3 years and figure it out.
Exactly. Exactly. Cause then once you get your stand in that right location, then the only thing you have to do is wait for the perfect conditions that you've established by hunting that stand before. And then you just get in there and the deer they don't have a clue you're there. Yep. They don't have a clue if you hunt it.
I've got spots that I can go into and I can guarantee you that I will not get bunked. There's not a chance that I'll get bunked. The access is perfect. The stand is the exact right height that it's supposed to be. And I may move a stand 2 feet up, 2 feet down to try to drag a thermal a certain direction. And it's been over 10 years just absolutely getting nailed over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And finally, it's like, I got it. And now I know when it's right. I know the time of year I go hunt it. Depending on if it's, is it a travel corridor? Are they feeding on acorns? If we have a good white oak here, I can go in there and I'll have a good hunt. I may not see what I want to kill, but I'm going to have a good hunt. It's going to be fun.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. How do you approach? Okay. So before we started recording, how many kids you got?
I have 2, both girls, right. daughters.
And how old are they?
11 and 9.
Okay. So they're in activity mode, right?
Oh,
you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
In there. You're also coaching athletics, correct?
Yeah. This fall is the first time I'm not coaching. My daughters got invited to be on a little higher level basketball team. And it was nice to go be a dad for once, sit and watch. 100%. I've coached between 2 and 4 teams, basically year round basketball for the last 5 years, a couple practices a week. It's a lot of, you know, 12 to 15 hours a week in a gym practice plus games. It's,
yep.
100%. I'm excited to be a dad.
That's fact. I'm the same way on my boys' baseball team. Like,
yeah, we had our first basketball tournament this past weekend, travel, you know, our club team, and it was like I was free spirited. It was so much fun to just watch. Yeah.
And yeah, you can just cheer at that point. Or do what I do and just pace the back of the bleachers where you're just pacing back and forth when your son's up to bat or
yeah, standing there trickling up a water bottle, just kinda yeah, exactly. But the nice thing is I don't have other parents bitching at me about playing time. I don't have to worry about making sure kids didn't forget something or that they all have water and food. Like, I just got to worry about my 2 girls enjoying their schedule, no planning. Yep. After doing it for so long, it was so much fun.
Absolutely. So, and you own your own business, correct?
Yeah, I own a small plumbing and contracting business.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Does shit always run downhill?
Yeah, most of the time. I mean, it always does on gravity. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, I didn't know, because the one plumber I talked to one time, he's just like, they say that until a toilet just explodes and overflows and it goes wherever it wants to at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's just water seeking level. Something clogged it up. It happens.
Yep. Let's hear a crazy plumbing story before we get into the next part of this.
A crazy plumbing story?
Do you have a crazy plumbing story? Like, you pulled out like a raccoon out of somebody's toilet that got.
We pulled a bunch of dead animals out of sewer lines for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, we pulled a lot of squirrels out of roof vents, the plumbing roof vents, to mm-hmm. get them out to, you know, pulling it back up. We've had to get inside of septic tanks and grease trap tanks before to clean them out. A lot of days are nice and easy and other days are not. I mean,
yeah.
Some days suck. Luckily, yeah. I don't have to do as much of that. That's the nice thing about owning it now is when we have like something really, really bad, or like you have to get underneath the house trailer that the septic line busted apart or broke or separated, and yep. they decide to tell you like 7 months later. So you go underneath there. They basically have a moat underneath their trailer. That's pretty rough.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so you own the business. So you're just like, hey, buddy, you go do it.
Yeah. I always say, listen, bud, I think I pay you. You don't pay me. Let's have fun. Let's enjoy this. Soak it up.
This is called work security.
Yeah.
This is called security. Yep. Okay.
I've got good guys. I treat them really well. And most of them, if I asked them to jump off in the middle of a lagoon, they would.
Okay. Perfect. So you're a good boss then.
I try to be. I've been a good employee my whole life, taken advantage of a few times, and not felt like I wasn't respected enough. So I try to never forget that and bring that to the table for my guys. Yeah.
Perfect. 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 As a good boss should, right?
They should. Should.
All right.
They're not numbers, and it's not just money. They're not robots. They're humans. They have a family. They need to eat. They want to be, and they're men. You know, that's it. They want to be respected more than anything.
Absolutely. I like that answer. That's the fact. All right. So with all that said, family, business, like full schedule throughout the course of your fall, how do you approach when to go into the woods and start making moves?
And it is tough because I'm eat up with bow hunting. Like I love to shoot stuff. It's so hard. I've got a buddy that we never talk from January 15th, which is when bow season's over in Missouri. We rarely talk from January 15th to about August 1st. And then August 1st hits and we talk every single day, all day about bow hunting. So I always try to go in early, kill a doe, do something to kind of ease the pain, you know, of having to wait.
You have to whistle.
And then I can get tactical. And like I said earlier, I know my spots. I don't have very many hang on spots anymore. I have a bunch of blind platforms I built for my daughters this year and did some clearing for food plots with a high lift, but I've got my spots. I know it's pretty good. I know when they're good. A lot of times don't even hang cameras in there anymore. I just go hunt them. And it's when I feel the itch, I go hunt. And then when we get close to the rut, when scrapes start opening up, if I get a rain in late October, I'm going to hunt the next morning. Everything else is done. And what I try to do is I try to be so involved as a dad, as a husband, as a business owner, as a coach, as whatever I am, that when it's time for me to decide I want to go hunting and kind of be that piece of shit that I am, I can tell them I'm going and nobody says anything about it.
Yeah, because you've checked all the boxes.
I check every box. A plus is the best that I possibly can, totally in the moment with my kids at every second that I possibly can. Yep. And when it's time for me to go, I'm going. You can argue or you can nod. It doesn't matter. I'm going.
Yep.
And they don't argue. They love it. They're fine with it. They know that they're proud of me. They want me to go do it. That's the nice thing.
Yep. How long have you been married?
10 years.
10 years. Okay. Do you remember what it was like 10 years ago or maybe even 8 years ago?
Yeah. I do. Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot different.
Yeah. So let's talk about it because right now there's some guys out there who their wife, you know, they're seeing the pumpkin patch and they're like, oh, fall's coming, which just kind of also triggers that. Oh no. That means he's going to be gone for a week or something.
Yeah.
Right?
I can tell you that.
Go for it.
Okay. So, my life's weird. Everything in my life has been, I've planned it out. I'm like my kids were planned. My marriage is planned. Everything that I do is like very much planned. Like my bow hunting, my wife, her dad hunts, but he wasn't as into it as like I am. You know how it is. Like when you're obsessed with it, like it's an addiction, like it's almost, you can admit that it's a little bit ridiculous. You know, now that I'm older, I can admit it's ridiculous. It's like, I know I have a problem and I need you to deal with it. I need you to be able to deal with it. But when I was younger, here's what I'll tell guys. If you have a girlfriend, if you're not going to marry her, her opinion doesn't matter. Go hunt. Sorry. Go do it. It doesn't matter. If she wants to go to a pumpkin patch and you're worried she's going to go with a different guy, she's not the right girl. Go. Yep. It doesn't matter. If you're married, you got to figure it out, bud. If you have little kids, you have to sit back and think, I know that it's 2 hours that I'm going, or I know that it's a weekend that I'm going, but she does have to deal with that. How can I make up for that the rest of the year? That's how you do it. Because a whole weekend without you there helping, it takes quite a few more hours than that to make that up for the whole year. Figure it out. The pumpkin patches, dude, if it's 75, go to the pumpkin patch. Your kids are only, you know, this big once.
100%. They're only,
it's not, again, I've changed so much this year specifically with my mindset. Like my kids are, my youngest daughter's way more into it. Find a way to be present in your life at all moments so that when you decide that you want to be selfish, nobody even argues with you. That's the biggest, it's the biggest way.
Yep.
Every game, every practice, every pumpkin patch. We just went last weekend to go to Eckerd's over in Illinois to go through a big, you know, lighted trail. Had a deer daylight that evening, nice buck daylight. Did I even think twice, like, ah, damn it? No, because I know what I'm waiting for. I know that I'm putting my time in, and when I'm ready to roll, nobody can question it.
Yep. I like that approach. I like that. The other thing you mentioned was you got one daughter who's kind of ate up with it. And then you got another daughter who has kind of, did you provide her with an opportunity and then she kind of pulled away from it?
So yes, they've always had their opportunity. When they were little, we'd go sit in a couple ground blinds I had and, you know, we'd scare the shit out of deer all day and it was fine. It was fun. You know, we were just enjoying it. Even then it was just a blast. My older daughter, she didn't want to rifle hunt because I don't rifle hunt a lot. Killed deer with the crossbow during youth season 2 years ago. And then after that, and she loved it. She had a blast. It was exciting. You could tell she enjoyed it. And now she's starting to get preteen and it's like, I don't know if I want to go, you know, I don't. Yep. I like to go shopping with mom more than I like to go hunting with dad, which is fine. Dangle the carrot, you know, and if they want to take a bite of it, then keep leading them down that trail. And if they don't force them.
Yep.
My youngest daughter was the opposite. She didn't want to shoot a deer. She didn't know she even wanted to hunt. We went a couple times and she was kind of ready to leave early. And she wanted to leave early. We leave early. No big deal. Mm-hmm. And this year, I got a high lift and I started clearing food plots. And dude, she was out there seeding the food plots with me. I built blind platforms and she's out there helping me set up the blinds. She's mad when I went without her. She wants to go with me every time. She's been four times with the crossbow with her, you know, like it's, she's totally eat up with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good thing, dude. Like
it's cool. And it's one of those things now I realize with her, maybe it might be easier to, there's been twice that we went and I took my bow and she just had to go if she wanted to go. Like you get to watch. I think it's a little bit of like, and I've heard some guys talk about it. Like even though they're so excited to go, you almost like, it's like the hot girl school. It's like you push her back. Like, no, not today. And then finally you're like, prom's coming, you know, the rut's coming. I'm like, okay, you want to come? Like, let's go. Yep. And then she's totally wound up. And that's what I'm trying to, I'm almost trying to like keep her at bay. You know, I'd rather say whoa than sick them. That's what I always say like, with my athletes.
Yeah, that's pretty, I like that approach. My daughter told me that, oh man, how long ago was it? This was been a couple weeks ago. The first week she went hunting, or the first part of youth season, she went hunting, and she was like, I want to go. I want to go shoot a buck. I want to go do this, right? And so because I sat her with grandpa, because grandpa wasn't like, he wasn't doing anything. I put my daughter with him in the best spot on the farm, what I thought. And then I took my son because he's not old enough. Like, I needed to be there because he's younger.
Right.
You need more patience with him than than grandpa had probably with him.
When he shot the dumbest deer in the woods?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So he shot the dumbest deer in the woods. And then, so my daughter was a little frustrated because brother shot a deer and she's been hunting 2 years now and hasn't had the opportunity. Well, with that said, we went out the next weekend. And at that point, it just felt like she had lost it.
Yeah.
And then she told me, Dad, I just don't know if I want to be a hunter right now.
Right.
And I said, okay, which doesn't really bother me any. I'm just going to continue to give her the opportunities and tell her that it is available. And whenever she wants to come with me, she can come with me. And that, you know, it was a little heartbreaking kind of, because I'm so passionate about it, but at the same time, I don't want to force her. I've never forced my kids to go. I think she just wants to turkey hunt, and I'm 100% okay with that.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365 Copilot.
Yeah, and I'm lucky to, like, I hunt the property, like, on my gravel road. Like, so, and so I have in my mind, like, if I know that I'm going in after a deer, the chance of me having a spot to be able to put a kid with me anyways is impossible. I just go, hey, see you later. Love you. See you in a few hours. You know, wish me luck. But it's kind of like no mission or just kind of going to go, I'll always kind of just creep back through before I get ready. I'm like, yeah, if they want to go hunting, you know, if anybody wants to go. And then they either do or they don't. No big deal. If they don't, I go. If they do, great. And I look at it like that with anything. No, I've seen guys get pretty upset their kids don't want to hunt. And sometimes I look at it as like, well, maybe did you ever make hunting a priority over them? And they are almost, they push it away because they're like, I don't want to be that, you know?
100%.
But also, maybe they just don't want to do it. Maybe, you know, I know me and my brother, like, we have different priorities in life. We have things that we like to do different than the other. You know, it's not a big deal. It'd be great if they did, and if they don't want to, guess what? I get to be a little bit selfish, and I get to go hunt whenever I want by myself and do the thing that I love.
Exactly.
And I'll find a kid. I've had kids that just want to go, and I'll take, like, friends, you know, it's like, hey, come on, I'll take you. And a lot of times that is what will make your kids jealous and want them to hunt. When they see, you know, their cousin go with their dad, they're like, no, I want to go.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Last thing I want to end on is I got a picture from you via Instagram, yeah, and you sent me a big old buck from Southeast Missouri that you arrowed. How long ago now?
That was last Wednesday.
Last Wednesday.
Is that the 8th?
Yep. Okay. So let's talk about where this buck was living. What was he doing? The terrain you shot him in, what the conditions were, and then like what made you say, hey, today's the day I need to get in the woods.
Yeah. So funny. We talked about this will lead into the way, like the whole wife deal, the wives and the kids and all that is. So, been patient mostly because I shot a doe earlier in the season with my daughter with me. Don't have hardly any bucks on camera, like next to nothing to hunt. The one spot that I had two good deer to hunt, one's a real big deer, is the spot I called about spring earlier. The one that always takes the big deep breaths. Okay. So I usually don't hunt it till the rut, but it's the only spot I had that had deer. So let's go, you know, when I have time. I hunted it last Tuesday. The weather, we got a little cool front and I hunted it last Tuesday. Didn't see anything. Mm-hmm. And I had a buck that was cruising on camera at a spot farther away in one of my food plots later in the evening. I got a cell camera picture when I got back home. I didn't want to push the needle too much. Didn't even say anything to my wife about it much besides the fact that I got the picture. And she texted me the next morning and was like, hey, I think you need to go in there and try to kill that deer. If you think you know where he's at, you should go try to kill him. And I said, yeah, I know, but I just hunted Tuesday, last night, a weeknight, school night, and I know that's tough. And she said, yeah, but I mean, as hard as you work for us and for those kids, like you should be able to go get yours before anybody else gets theirs. And I said,
wow,
screw it. Yeah, let's try it. I didn't hunt the food plot. I went and hunted out of my saddle. Got a big tire line that cuts my 94 acres in half. And I got in the tree at 2 o'clock because there was two bucks that cruised through there. And the one I knew came from that power line. And my idea, we talked about this with the thermals too, and how they can scent detect basically in minutes or hours. You know, you kind of think they can tell you how long it's been. So I nose jammered up and I got in at 2 o'clock in case one of those bucks came in close to dark through that power line. I hope they would hit my ground scent and would just walk right through it instead of hitting, an hour old fresh scent. Didn't see anything. And this is it's about 80 yards off of that big power line, pretty thick timber. I mean, it's nasty in there. And I had two nice little openings that I could shoot. I could see decent because we have leaves falling pretty good already.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bench, just like I talked about, there's a bench that comes, it parallels the power line and it has a slight inward slope. So it comes up, the bench rolls almost back down to hit. And I mean, ever so slight, like a foot and a half a drop on a 15 foot wide bench, nothing crazy, but enough that I think it held moisture, and the white oaks on that bench had better acorn crop than the rest of what my property does. And then it rolls up to the power line. So I hunted right above that bench. There's a big ravine behind me that cuts that bench. And I knew my wind was bad, like not good, but I knew when it got close to dark that it would suck off in that ravine. And it is, I mean, so thick, nothing could walk through it.
Yeah.
I thought that's how it's going to work if it works. And at 6:15, I saw the buck that I shot walking the power line, walking the exact trail that I came in 4 hours before that. And so this is, 45, 50 minutes before dark. He comes down and every three steps he would take, he'd stop, head in the air, licking his nose, stomping. He knew something was up, but he didn't know. Again, I was nose jammered. So he had my ground scent mixed with nose jammer scent on the ground for 4 hours. And I think scent control in a way is BS. I think it can help, but I don't think it works, if that makes sense. I think it may give you, it may give you 5% better, which I'll take it. So I'm going to use it. But you don't think that you're invisible.
Right.
He hits the scent over and over and over. And he finally, his head enters the timber, which I didn't know if he was going to go the opposite side or come to me. His head finally hits the timber at 6:55. So for 40 minutes, he's sitting in that he walks a 100-yard stretch of power line. I came in the timber, and he's super slow, methodical. I got like 10 minutes till shooting lights over, maybe. It took him 5 minutes to work that 80 yards to get to me milling on those acorns. And he walked that bench from basically there's a saddle in the power line, crossed that saddle, came in onto the bench, and was parallel in the power line on the bench, feeding on acorns. Comes through, and I don't like stopping deer. I won't mat the deer at all. I've seen them jump out of their skin. And so I was just kind of like a faint squirrel bark out in the distance. Yep. I'm drawing on him 20 yards, and I'm about 10 foot in the tree in my saddle. He's at 20 yards. I draw him, and he won't stop. I whistle at him. He wouldn't stop. Turn, came in quarter and two, and when he got to 12 yards, he stopped quarter and two, and I put it right on his shoulder. I'm shooting a new broadhead, and I thought, we're going to see how well this broadhead works right now. And I anchored in on him, and I shot him, blew through, busted his shoulder in half, his actual shoulder bone in half, and blew through his heart. He mule kicked, drug his nose, drug his face 40 yards, piled up, an absolute blast. Worked exactly the way I hoped it would.
That a boy.
It was so much fun.
And even, you know, this many years into a journey, there's certain things that when they happen the right way and the way that we all plan, it just fires you up.
There's nothing cooler than getting one picture of a deer and you can just close your eyes. I'm a visual guy. Like, you close your eyes and it's like, this freaking deer is walking through here. This is how he's getting through there. I know this is exactly how he's getting through here. There's no way he's going anywhere else. And you get in the tree in October 8th. It's 76 degrees, you know, 78 degrees. You hang 10 foot off the ground. And from then until dark, you're just like, you just feel it building inside your chest. Like, oh my gosh, this is it.
Something's going to happen.
I've done it twice like that, I would have taken every dollar that I've ever made and put it on a table. And then like, I'll probably screw the shot up, but I'll put every dollar that I've ever made on the fact that I will see the buck that I'm trying to hunt tonight.
Yeah.
And the biggest deer I've ever killed in my life, I actually did it twice. I shot him, on October 7th. He was 30 yards. I had my single pin set to 25, super calm, thought he would drop, aimed low chest, lower third, and I grazed his chest, cut his chest open, didn't hurt him at all. And 17 days later, I did the exact same thing, same wind, same type of weather pattern, had the same doe and fawn together that were feeding out in front of me on acorns when he came through. And when he came through, I shot him in almost the exact same footsteps. I did it with him, and then that buck last week, I knew exactly where he was coming from. I was set up. And I mean, 10 foot off the ground, 12-yard shot. I mean, you're in the wheelhouse on each other. You can hear each other breathing. It was a blast.
That was awesome. Yeah, that was awesome.
I hit him. I'm like, there's nothing better when you know you smoked him.
The thud.
He's dragging his, like that, just that smack. He mule kicks, smokes his face to the ground, and just drags his head 40 yards, and it's... You hear him stop for just a second, then hear him just pile up. I mean, the tree you're in is shaking. It is wild. Yeah,
that's amazing, man. Well, congratulations.
And that's when you're like, it's all worth it. You know, this is the rush. This is the 10 seconds that you're just miserable. That secondhand fun that you're just miserable sometimes. And you're like, oh, God, I'll snort that line again. You know, I'll do it again.
That's a fact, my friend. Well, congratulations. Great deer.
Yeah, appreciate it.
On that. Also, how many tags do you have left? What's the Missouri tag?
So you get two buck tags. You get two buck tags. You kill one. It's kind of weird. You kill one before rifle season and one during rifle season, and then one in, you know, second bow season after rifle, or you can kill both bucks in second bow season. You can only kill one deer with a firearm. You kill both with your bow, but you can't kill them both early. So I'm tagged out until rifle season.
Okay. So are you going to use a rifle again, or are you going to go for bow?
No, I'll probably bow hunt. I, So rifle season in Missouri is 11 days long. And I'll take the rifle out like second week into rifle season sometimes. If I just am not, I don't have a bead on anything. And I'm going to go hunt, like, say that power line or something like that. Like, I may take a rifle and set up in a power line, but dude, I haven't shot a deer. The farthest deer I've shot in over 10 years is, that I'll send you a picture of it. 150-inch 10 pointer that I killed 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he was 28 yards when I shot him. Yeah. That's the farthest deer I've shot in over 10 years with a gun or a bow.
Nice.
So the last two deer I killed with my gun were 3 yards and 12 yards.
That's right. That's right. Well, my friend, congratulations on a great start to a season.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate
thank you
it.
For taking time out of your day to hop in and, you know, check in with us and BS with us a little bit. Congratulations on having a badass name and a badass story.
I do have a question for you.
Yep.
Are you still timing your flushes?
Am I still timing them? Dude.
Yeah. Dude, I timed
them.
I was shocked. I'm like, I didn't know anybody else in the world tried to nail those together. I thought it was just me.
Nope. Hey, there's more of us out there. I think we should start a group.
I saw that. Multiple guys commented on Kenyon's thing. It's like, oh, yeah, I've been doing that forever. I'm like, dude, I thought I was the only one. It's like being a fan of Fast and the Furious. You're like, you don't want to bring it up in a group conversation. You know, it's...
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man, that's why I was so adamant. I try to be the average Joe, right? I feel like I'm the average, like not just with like the hunting aspect of it, but just like in life. Right. And so when I brought that up and he was like, no, and I just like, dude, I feel like there's a lot of people who probably do that, that just don't talk about it. And of course I was probably
now we
right,
have a so. Secret society.
Exactly. Of P timings.
Yeah.
So, hey, Dalton, man, thank you very much for your time.
I appreciate you, buddy. Good luck.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.